What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Rummy and Ray Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm your host, Raymond Summerlin, and I'm joined, as I am every week, by the very best in the business, Mr. Rumford Johnny. What's up, Johnny?
Happy holidays, Ray. It's that time of year, man. The season's almost over. We all want to save up our pennies for the holidays. You know, it's that time of year, man. We want a little extra cash for the G.I. Joe with a Kung Fu grip. So I'm urging all of our listeners to go to our homepage and also to go to FanDuel and enter the Rummy Ray promo code and enter the Rummy and Ray Listener League. Yes, that's right. Last week, you and I sucked.
Terrible.
Big time.
We're the worst DFS players ever, apparently.
I guess. I mean, I thankfully I was not as bad as you, but I was not much better. I think I probably finished probably like four spots above you. But also there was some savvy people in there. Some of our friends in there weren't as good either. I won't name them. Pat Thorman, Benny Riccardi. But anyway, who didn't do too well either. But we welcome everybody to come in there, check it out. Again, enter the Rummy Ray promo code if you're a first-time user. We'll be putting that link in the show notes. We'll be tweeting it out. It's $5 to get in there, win some money. The winner of the league goes the next week to week 17. You get a free buy-in for the following week. So you're hooked up. You don't have to worry about spending any money for the following week and maybe get out, take our money again. Again,
definitely take our money again.
We sucked this past week, but it's a nice league. They actually increased it this week to 100 people.
Yeah, so it filled up so quick last week. I felt a little bad about it, but it's higher now. So you're
and which will be great. So everybody will get in there and make some money, man. Make some last minute cash before the holidays. Definitely check that out.
Speaking of sucking, that's what I've been doing for the last 3 weeks. I'm on a run. And you know, it's funny. I actually think we've still been given pretty good advice on the show. A lot of my plays have been hitting. I talked last week about like guys like Will Ty and a bunch of those guys that hit. But I'm having the worst run of luck in cash. I missed out on all my 50-50s and double up by like a point 2 weeks ago. Last week, I had Danny Amendola in my cash lineup who scored negative 1.2 points for me.
I did too.
So I'm actually on – this has been by far my worst run of cash I can remember. I haven't cashed in a single 50-50 or double up in 3 weeks, which is really crazy to me. But what it led me to talk about is – kind of what I do with my cash lineups and what I got away from doing in the midseason, and I'm going to go back to it. And the first thing I'd like to talk about, and this is more of a theory thing, is why you should have head-to-heads as a part of your kind of cash game. If you're playing 80% of your money in cash games, why a significant part of that should probably be in head-to-heads. And that's because it gives you the opportunity to have some variance. So even though I haven't hit in any double-ups or in any 50-50s, I have still been making some of the money back, at least, in head-to-heads, because I might have a bad week, but if someone else has a worse week, that means I still have that opportunity. And so one of the things I really love about head-to-heads is that, you know, when all is lost in the cash game, and by the time the early games were over last week, I had thrown that cash game lineup out the window, it still allowed me to get some head-to-head cash back, is kind of how I view it, and help out. And so that was the first thing. And then the second thing, I've really, at the beginning of the season, I got away from this, and I've seen my return on investment fall after I've gotten away from this. I am a big proponent, and I know there are people that don't feel this way. I'm a big proponent of multiple cash lineups and of constructing cash lineups from a pool of players in which you mitigate your risk in some way. And what I mean by that is I want to construct in a given week three cash lineups if possible, and I want to have six running backs that I'm using. And so I'll use running back A and B together, running back B and C together, and running back A and C together. So that way I get each running back in two lineups, each running back with the other running back. So if one of those running backs falls off or gets hurt or has a terrible week, that doesn't absolutely kill me in all of my lineups. And it's something that I did early in the season, had a lot of success with. I got away from it in the middle of the season. I just, you know, everybody always said use one lineup, and that kind of stuck with me. I go, well, I guess maybe these people are right. But I don't think that's true. I think that the way I build those lineups are are really the way to really find consistent success. What do you think about either of those things?
No, I absolutely agree with you. Like, let's give an example of this past week. I know a lot of people, and I saw a lot of people with lineups who had Adrian Peterson and Brandon Bolden.
That hurt.
And that's 1-2. I mean, that's a high priced stud and a low priced guy who we thought a lot of people thought were gonna have who was gonna have a decent amount of volume. And as it turns out, and I warned some people about this because on Twitter, I talked to a lot of beat writers who thought this was going to be a little bit of a split, and it turned out to be exactly that. You know, they brought in Iosefa, who's really pretty new to the team, essentially, and he came in and had 15 touches. So that's the type of thing that can kill you. And, you know, a situation like Peterson, that's just bad luck with the injury. He was going on to have a pretty decent day until he got hurt. You have something like that happen, two players immediately. I mean, you're really just playing to hopefully win some of your cash lineups, because two players right out of the equation, right out of the gate, are going to hurt you, significantly. So I absolutely agree with you. I think you need to have some variance there to balance that a little bit, because if you have too much of the same lineup, you know, you're going to get killed across the board. You're going to get lucky maybe here and there and be able to sort of, you know, swim against the tide with those types of, poor plays or non-optimal plays at running back. But then, the rest of them you're probably going to get killed, you know, and that's, you need to have some variance. I absolutely agree with you. I haven't always done that. I'll be honest with you. I haven't always done that. Some weeks I just feel so good about the lineup that I just stick with some of those running backs and usually stick to only 1, 2, or 3. And sometimes it kills you. Sometimes it doesn't. And it works out okay. But I totally agree with you. I think if you have a good pool of starters that you want to use, then you should definitely stick with that with some variance, and you're probably going to be able to cash every week and mitigate some of that risk.
And I mean, I think that last point you say about it's a lineup you really love. I loved my lineup last week with Adrian Peterson and Denard Robinson as my backs. I thought that was gold.
Yeah. Right.
And Russell Wilson as my quarterback. I thought it was absolutely gold, and it didn't work out that way. And so I think that what this allows you to do is it allows you to accept the very likely reality that you're going to be wrong at some percentage. I mean, you go and watch, and I think this is a really interesting thing to go and look at the top rankers at Fantasy Pros and the way they do their rankings. And you see that, the top rankers are getting, 60% of the matchups that they look at correct. Think about that. 60%. These are the top guys in all of the fantasy community, and that's what they're getting right. So it's one of those situations where you just have to kind of assume that there's a reasonable chance that even though you've done all your homework. Yeah, I mean, Adrian Peterson would have had a great game last week if the ankle doesn't happen, probably.
Right.
I mean, we saw what McKinnon did, and then he had, even after he came back with the ankle, he had some big runs or big holes there, but he gets hurt and it doesn't work out. Or I remember there was a lineup I had with Ryan Fitzpatrick that would have been a great cash lineup, would have cashed everywhere. He goes out on the third play. Geno Smith puts up a 21-point game against the Raiders, and that's all she wrote for my cash lineup. So I think that it's what you're doing is you're building in this idea that you could be wrong, or because we play or we're playing with a violent game where people get hurt, where you kind of mitigate that risk. And I think it helps a lot. And I think that there's enough value most weeks, which we'll talk about here in a second, that you can find three running backs and you can find, six or seven receivers, and you can find two or three quarterbacks and so on and so forth that really do have that value that you could be interesting plays. So I know it's something that I got away from. I never should have gotten away from it. I've suffered because I got away from it for sure. And it's one of those things that I will be doing for probably the rest of my DFS career, however much longer my wife lets me lose the money I've been losing the past 2 weeks. All right. So let's get on to the games here. We have the first game we have is Jacksonville. As always, we'll look at the five highest totals, and then we'll talk about our stacks on stacks on stacks and some contrarian plays. The first game we have does not have a total on it anymore because of the Drew Brees situation, but it opened up at 52, and it looks like Drew Brees is going to play. That's what the reports look like. And so we're going to talk about it as if Drew Brees is going to play, or at least I am, because that's what it looks like reading the tea leaves. And so we'll go from there. Obviously, this all changes if he – ends up not playing. And so we'll see how that goes. But Jacksonville at New Orleans, it opened up as New Orleans 3.5-point home favorites with the line of 52, which was the highest of the week. And I guess we can start with Breeze. I'm of the opinion he's playing. Based on what you've read, what are you thinking?
I agree, too. I think he is, too. It's funny. I mean, it's one of those things that, you know, he could shut it all down. But I think he's the kind of player, I just think he's probably realizing that there's not much time left for him to play. And I think he's that kind of player that wants to really gut it out. He's a tough player, and that, you know, he certainly wants to play potentially. Again, I have no reason to think that he's going to, like, hang him up tomorrow or anything. But I think somebody at his age is looking at how much time he has left to play in the league. And, you know, this is his last home game of the season. He wants to gut it out, and he can always have surgery, you know, at the end of the season if he needs to have surgery. And he can gut it out through this injury. So I think he will play. I think absolutely it's a winnable game for them against Jacksonville. I mean, Jacksonville's, you know, they can put up points, but I think at home New Orleans certainly can win this game. So I think he's going to play. So, I mean, obviously – we like to have a slice of this pie. This is one of those typical, you know, matchups where we can certainly get correlation plays. We like to talk about getting a slice of both sides of the coin, where you can get, you know, a couple of receivers potentially from New Orleans and Drew Brees, maybe paired with somebody like Julius Thomas on the other side, you know, and vice versa. And I like to be able to construct, especially GPP lineups like that, where you have a slice of what we think is potentially a good shootout. Now, the reason we think this is a potential shootout is because both defenses stink.
Are terrible. And actually, to put it more bluntly, both pass defenses are terrible. Jacksonville's run defense is actually pretty good. But that's even better.
Right. So that means they're going to have to throw.
Yeah.
So, yeah, absolutely. So we know that this is a potential, you know, 35-31 type game, which, you know, makes your mouth water, and we definitely want pieces of that. So yeah, I think he will play. I mean, obviously we want to wait to the last minute to check it out, because if he doesn't, then, you know, we know the total is going to slip, and we know that makes that a little bit less desirable. So you're not essentially all in a GPP. Maybe you're varying that a little bit, maybe not having as many of those players in your lineup, but yeah, I'm of the belief that he will play. I mean, I put it this way, I'd be surprised if he didn't play. I have no reason to believe, no reason to understand why he won't, but I just have that feeling that he's going to gut it out for the last 2 weeks of the season.
I do too, and I think that this injury, from what I've read, it makes it seem like it's a full tear of the plantar fascia, or fascia, I forget how you say it, which as I remember kind of doing some research about Peyton Manning, the full tear is better than a partial tear.
Right.
It's less painful. And so it's something that you can really play through, which, unlike Peyton, he wasn't able to play through. So I think that there's a reasonable chance he plays. If he doesn't play, at FanDuel, Matt Flynn is $5,000. I don't even know if he would start. You know, they have Garrett Grayson, the rookie, sitting there. It'd be really interesting to see, but it's one of those things that if Breeze doesn't play, I probably am off everybody in this offense. Even Tim Hightower, who might get more carries, but you'd have to worry about the efficiency with a, you know, with a passing game that you can't trust. But I think Breeze is going to play. And what's going to be good about this is, even if Breeze plays, or even if he's declared active well before Sunday, which I think he might be, this is a situation I bet people try to avoid, especially at 8,200. And so you could be in a situation with Breeze at under 5% ownership, Brandon Cooks at very low ownership, who I like this week. He might get shadow coverage from Davin House, who's been shadowing people. But number one receivers have been doing work against Jacksonville the last 3 weeks. Julio got open pretty much at will against House. Now, Brandon Cooks isn't Julio Jones, but it's not like that's something you're really worried about. And Brandon Cooks hit tournament value at his price in 4 of 7. So he's a great tournament play. Willie Snead doesn't really have that upside, but you know I love my boy Willie. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Ben Watson, to Jacksonville's 28th in Football Outsiders DVOA against tight ends. He's had 9, 8, 11, and 12 targets the last 4 weeks. I mean, he's a cash play, basically, at this point with all the work he's getting, especially in a great matchup. So I think that there's so much value here if Breeze plays, and I'm going to like pretty much every part of the passing game. I like Willie Snead, even at 6,000, a little less because, like I said, he's not really flashed any of that tournament upside. But with Cooks and Watson, for sure, both of them even in cash, I think. I think they're great plays if Breeze plays.
Yep. And on the opposite side, and I agree with you, I think because of the low ownership in GPPs, I think I probably want some piece of the Jacksonville situation, but maybe, like I said, I think I'm more high on Julius Thomas. I think, you know, obviously on the flip side, New Orleans has been bad against everything, but I think they're a little bit better, you know, with some of the outside receivers. And I think Julius Thomas can exploit their matchups at tight end. So I like him a little bit. So if you're going to do that correlation play, you go with Breeze and the New Orleans wide receivers and maybe Julius Thomas. And I really like that. But obviously you can stack pretty much anybody. Robinson, it's a good play. It looks like he's going to play this week. Denard Robinson and Ian Allen Robinson as well. Hearns, probably not as good of a play. I think he's more of a high variance play because, you know, you do have to sort of count on him to score touchdowns. He's not getting that volume.
And to your point, he has five or fewer targets in three of his last four games.
Yeah. And Robinson hasn't, like, I think Bortles has been spreading it around a little bit more.
Yeah, Robinson, 9 total targets the last two games. It's kind of a scary situation at wide receiver right now.
But I think that's why I lean more to Thomas, because I think he's got that red zone upside. Obviously, you know, his price is okay. It's not like crazy high on DraftKings. It might be higher on FanDuel, but I think that if I want to play both sides of that matchup, I definitely want some exposure to Julius Thomas.
I agree with that completely. New Orleans, third most points to tight ends in the last five. They're worst against tight ends and DVOA's numbers, which I like that. If DVOA talks about versus number one, number two, that's harder because, you know, different wide receivers are different. But that tight end number is a really solid number, and New Orleans is the worst against it. Julius Thomas had 9 targets last week when they were attacking an Atlanta defense that's not very good against tight ends. He has 7 targets in 5 of his last 7. He has double-digit points at FanDuel in 4 of his last 5. He didn't score last week, but he scored in the 4 before that. I love Julius Thomas. He's another guy. I think both of these tight ends are reasonable cash plays at only – and Julius Thomas is 6,500. I think he can return cash value on that, you know, very, very easily. And he showed a couple weeks ago some upside, and it's such a good matchup. You'd want to see that as well, especially if he keeps getting those, you know, 8, 9, 10 targets that he's been getting lately. So I agree with you completely. And then on Denard Robinson, I mean, if he's going to play, he played every single snap last week.
Yep.
He had a touchdown vultured by Blake Bortles on an end around where the play before he made a catch, and it looked like he got close to the end zone, but he wasn't given the touchdown, and they scored on a bootleg right after that. He wasn't good last week against Atlanta, but he ran 35 routes, and he was always involved in the passing game. And so he's that type of running back that is still good in cash, because no matter what this game flow does, didn't work out last week, but no matter what this game flow does, you know he's going to be involved because he's not leaving the field, and he's a good receiver who was very involved in the passing game last week. So I like that. And you know what? My stack, if I'm stacking Jacksonville side, because I mean Blake Bortles, I don't think we have to say Blake Bortles is a play because he's a very good fantasy quarterback that's playing against New Orleans. That's really all you need to know. It would be shocking if he didn't hit cash value even at 8,200. He has at least 23.5 points in the last 4 weeks. I just play Blake Bortles. I mean, there you go.
Yep.
That's all you need to know. But
yeah, I mean, you could go. He could, honestly, he could be that other side of the coin. You can just go, you know, unstacked or naked Blake Bortles, and then just really kind of stack elsewhere on the other side with New Orleans.
I actually think Blake Bortles and Denard Robinson is an interesting thing to do, because,
or you could go Bortles, Robinson, Thomas too as well.
Yeah, because I think that if you have Bortles and Robinson, even though running backs in Jacksonville don't score because Jacksonville throws the ball at the goal line
more
than any other team in the league. But I think if you have Robinson and Bortles, you're pretty much guaranteed you get all the touchdowns. Yep. Robinson's a huge part of the passing game regardless, or was last week. Denard Robinson was. So I think that if you go Bortles and Shoelace, I actually think that's a really reasonable way to get a big chunk of this game that I think we agree is going to be pretty high scoring.
Absolutely.
So on to our next game, we have Green Bay at Arizona. Arizona's 4.5 point home favorites. The total's 50.5. A little more action on Arizona in this game. It's not really crazy. The number went to 4 for a little bit, which suggests to me that there was some sharp play on Green Bay, but it came right back. 90% of the action in this game is on the over. It opened at 49.5. It's up to 50.5. It might keep climbing. I can tell you that I'm going to wait till Sunday, but I'm going to put some money on the under in this
game. I knew that was coming. I mean, you sound like you're on the Scooch Cast or something.
I'm telling you that this number was too high to start with, and now
I agree.
Oh yeah, I'll take the under. So
yeah, I agree. I mean, there's part of me that the GPP part of me that says, you know, I definitely want some of Green Bay. Just because, I mean, I think the sentiment, again, the consumer confidence is pretty low. I think there's an opportunity here for Arizona to just kind of go absolutely ham at home. But there's also an opportunity for Arizona to play really safe football and keep it kind of within reach and that the game doesn't get out of hand. So to that point with you, with all the movement coming from the public on the over, then it does kind of make you think that it's going to hit the under. Although let's be honest, Vegas hasn't been absolutely sharp.
Yeah, they were destroyed last week.
Yeah, so there is something to say for that. I mean, it's not always going to happen. Vegas is going to win more often than not, but I think there's an opportunity here for both scenarios to play out. What I do like, and I mentioned this earlier, already early in the week, and people are kind of moving toward that sentiment now, is that without Tyrann Mathieu in the mix, I do like Cobb. I mean, the volume hasn't been there. The efficiency hasn't been there of this offense. But I think the ownership will be relatively low on both. I think, you know, where Cobb is right now in price, it's not like it's outrageous, especially on DraftKings. I think he's only 6,100 on DraftKings.
He's 6,800 on FanDuel.
Yeah, I mean,
which
it's not
based on the, I mean, 6,800 on FanDuel is probably even less than 6,100 on DraftKings.
Oh yeah,
if you did the calculations out on it.
Yep, absolutely. And for me, you know, if there's going to be an opportunity for somebody to get over, I mean, the outside receivers aren't going to do anything. I think James Jones is going to be a non-factor. I think there's probably more probability that Richard Rodgers scores a touchdown in this one. It's possible that Green Bay, you know, is just fighting the tide in this one and gets, you know, there's something to be, they're both playing for something in this game. They're both playing for a seed in this game, actually. So head to head, if Green Bay wins, they potentially could win a seed, seeding in the playoffs. So I think there's something to be played for. Both teams will be pretty amped for this game, I think. So that does encourage me a little bit, but I'm absolutely with you. I think that the scenario that it could, you know, could be underwhelming is possible. I will say, though, in GPPs, I will have some Cobb in my lineup, you know, cheaper ones. I mean, you know, situation like having Rodgers and Cobb, where you can have exposure to the Jacksonville-New Orleans game as well, certainly make that happen and have super low ownership with Cobb and Rodgers and help you win a GPP. So that's a scenario I see. I don't really like anybody else, Ray. I'm not really crazy about the running game. I think it's a bad matchup for them. I think this is just going to be one of those games where they're going to have to throw anyway. And I just don't like any of the other counterparts at wide receiver.
I disagree about Cobb, and I might end up being wrong on this.
No, go ahead. Tell me
why,
man.
But I think there's a reasonable chance that Peterson follows him around even into the slot. Peterson's been doing that this year. He followed he followed Tavon Austin around even into the slot. He followed him on four of six in his slot, according to Pro Football Focus. They have, like you said, outside, there's not really any threats there. You know, losing Mathieu is a big, big, big hit. I mean, that guy was a legitimate defensive player of the year candidate. He was a playmaker. He was shutting people down in the slot. But Justin Bethel, they played that guy a lot of money, and they paid him a lot of money, even though he's a special team player and they paid him for a special team. They paid him a lot of money because they wanted him to start next year, because Jerod Powers is a free agent. So it's not like they're bringing somebody in off the bench who they don't think can be a corner. I think they paid him that money now because they think he's going to be a really good corner after Powers walks in the offseason. So at least that's how I read the situation. So I don't think that the defense is going to take as much of a step back as people think. And I do think there should be some Peterson. If I'm grabbing a Green Bay wide receiver in this game, I think it's going to be James Jones, actually. I mean, James Jones, he could get Peterson, and if that's the case, then, you know, then he's done. Like, I mean, Darius Slay completely took him out of the game. He can't do anything against those guys. And I mean, he's not going to do well against Bethel either, but, or Jerod Powers. But my view is that it doesn't make sense to keep Peterson in the kind of corner he is on a guy like James Jones, in my opinion. It doesn't really fit the style that Peterson, a smaller slider, quicker guy, against a guy like Jones, who's going to be more physical. And so I don't know that that's exactly how they're going to go. And I guess we'll see. But if I'm taking a shot, I'm taking a shot on Jones, who's 5,600, instead of Cobb, who's 6,800. And I agree with you completely on the running backs. I want, it's probably going to be a bad game flow situation, and we have no idea what they're going to do. I'm out. I'm also completely out on Aaron Rodgers at 8,500. He's been, over the last 5 weeks, he's been the 14th best quarterback in terms of point per game scoring at FanDuel, and he is a full 2 points per game behind Drew Brees in 13th, and he's only 0.7 points ahead of Alex Smith in 19th. So there's like a top 13, and then there's a gap, and then there's Aaron Rodgers, and he's been part of that lower tier. He just hasn't been that good lately, and he's $8,500. I'm completely out on him. What about the Arizona side? What do you think?
I think it's wide open. I think obviously, you know, David Johnson, you know, kudos to the David Johnson folks who came out early, who really loved him. He was a big spark guy. Myself, a few other folks in the community thought that he wasn't a great inside runner.
This guy on the other side of this microphone as well.
Yeah, and we all thought he was a wonderful pass catcher, because he was very prolific in college.
He is
as a pro as well. So, and he's proven to do both, actually, and that's great. That's good for his game, and his pricing on DraftKings is still like 5,800. So for me, you know, you have to almost have him in both cash and GPPs. I mean, I don't see veering off of him, because I think his opportunity is there. His volume is going to be there. He's involved in the passing game. Because it's a little bit more up and down with the other receivers, I think it's kind of split. I think that he's probably the safest target, believe it or not, of the four, because I think, or even five, if you include Nelson, because, you know, they're going to spread it around. Palmer's going to spread it around a little bit. And there are going to be some weeks, if you are correct about your assumption about the under being in play this week, then he's not going to have to do as much. So there's potential there for some of these other receivers to have those games that underwhelm. We saw that last week with Brown, who had a ton of drops, and Floyd, you know, where their numbers just weren't where we thought they'd be. Now, they're all priced really nicely, and I do think that John Brown gets targeted he goes right back to his same amount of targets, because I do think that Palmer likes Brown a lot, and he does want to get him those big plays. But I'll say this: I think that when you look at situations for wide receivers, because I know people get freaked out about drops for wide receivers. You know, with somebody like Brown last week, he killed a lot of people. People will be off of him because of that. It's not like a running back. It's not like a quarterback's going to stop throwing to a wide receiver because he's had a few drops. It's not like a running back who has ball security issues where they're going to be banished from the land and sit on the bench and never get any touches. You know, wide receivers are going to drop passes, and quarterbacks are going to forgive them, and they're going to look for them again the following week. So I do think Brown has value. I think people will be off him. I think a lot of people have been talking about Floyd, and I do like Floyd, and he certainly has been productive. I think if I look at ownership this week, Ray, and we see ownership kind of uptick a little bit more for Floyd. And they were very close last week, by the way, Ray, in terms of ownership. I mean, within like a sliver of each other. If we see a little bit of an uptick for Floyd and Brown comes down a little bit, then I'm all over John Brown this week. I think he'll get his targets. And if his price, you know, not necessarily his price, because it's still a little bit higher than Floyd, but in terms of ownership numbers, if it comes down, I'm all over Brown this week.
I actually think that Floyd's numbers are going to come down. I mean, he didn't have a bad game last week, but he didn't have the game that I think people were expecting. Yeah, and anytime a guy comes out and has just a meh kind of game, people get off him the next week. And I think that that's a mistake.
I will say this though. Let me just stop you real quickly. I will say this: on DraftKings, he's priced better than Brown though.
He's priced higher?
No, he's cheaper. Oh.
Yeah, so, he's cheaper on FanDuel too. Brown 64 and Michael Floyd 63.
Yeah, it's a much bigger difference in on DraftKings. So that I think people will still be on Floyd because of his price and because of the way the offense is set up and because of the drops for Brown. So I'm kind of hoping to see that happen because then I really want more shares of Brown and he'll still be at a very attractive price.
The guy I definitely won't have, I like Brown and Floyd. You know, John Brown, he has double-digit points in all but three games, double-digit FanDuel points in all but three games this year. One of those games, he was physically limited. He only had three targets, and the other two were weeks two and three. So weeks two and three in games he's been healthy, he's had double-digit points in every single one of them. Green Bay doesn't really give up a lot of big plays, but when they give them up, they give up the big play. They've given up the sixth fewest plays, passing plays of 20 plus yards, but they've given up the eighth most of 30 plus yards. So if you beat them, you beat them. And that's the kind of guy that John Brown is. And he should have a much bigger game last week. I agree that people, I think, will come off him a little bit. I like him quite a bit. And, you know, he's one of those guys that I would even consider in cash just because you have that consistency that he's shown week after week. I'm off Larry Fitzgerald. I have been off Larry Fitzgerald the past 5 weeks. He's not scoring and he's not doing big plays. He has 11 targets total the last 2 weeks. He has one red zone target in the last 3 weeks. He has not hit tournament value really since week three. He's getting Casey Hayward, who might be in the slot, who might be the best corner that Green Bay has, which is saying something because they've got three pretty good ones, including rookie Randall if Sam Shields gets back. So I think that's an avoid. And I do think I'm avoiding Palmer too, just because, like I said, I think this is a lower scoring game than maybe the over-under suggests. And Palmer hasn't really been Palmer the last 4 or 5 weeks. I think what I'm going to try to do is grab a weapon and hope I grab the right one and play David Johnson everywhere in every lineup that I have, because anytime a running back's getting 25 touches a game, you just kind of have to play him. Some news fresh off the press.
Nice.
NFL Zian Rappaport reports Drew Brees is in horrible, miserable pain.
What?
But is intent on playing in week 16.
Nice.
So
what an OG, man. What an OG.
He's
God bless you, Drew Brees.
Yeah, keep on playing, brother. We'll see what happens. But for our analysis from before, if he plays, I still think that our analysis holds. If he doesn't, then time to back up.
Yeah, totally. I mean, that sucks because it's week 16. I mean, we get a couple of weeks left and we really want to kind of maximize this. And these matchups are really, really nice this week.
Yeah, Yeldon being hurt the last 2 weeks was just a disaster. It was just so upsetting.
Yeah.
And then how about I was looking at the lines. There are, I believe, three games right now, including the New Orleans game that aren't posted. The Miami-Indy game and the Houston-Tennessee game aren't posted either. Can you remember this much quarterback upheaval, this many quarterback injuries at any point in the last decade? I can't remember a season this many quarterbacks.
Let's extend the season. Let's extend the season.
Yeah, no, let's put another two games in. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Why not? It's unreal. I've never seen, but that's what makes you really kind of admire and respect the durability of some quarterbacks in this league that just continue to kind of keep playing through it. So,
or Joe Thomas, for crying out loud. Joe Thomas has played every snap of his career. He has not missed a snap in his career at left tackle.
Yeah, he's a monster.
It's incredible. It's just incredible. Yeah. Our next game, we have Washington at Philadelphia. Philadelphia, 3-point home favorites. This is a Saturday night game. This is for all the marbles. If Washington wins this game, I think it's pretty much over. If Philadelphia wins this game, then they would control their destiny because of the tiebreaker. In fact, both of these teams control their destiny. If they win out, there's no way the other team can take them out. So I think that this is going to be a really interesting game to watch. I'm glad that they got a Saturday night game correct, and we're actually going to get to see a fun one. 71% of the action is on Washington. Line has not moved. I doubt it will off of the key number. I would bet Philly in a heartbeat. I will bet Philly at 3. I mean, Washington is a completely different team on the road. Absolutely different team on the road than they are at home. Philadelphia, 20.5, that's their total. We said last week we didn't want any part of Philadelphia, we literally did not talk about a single one of their players. I guess we have to talk about them this week. Bradford at least had an okay game.
Yeah.
6,300 at FanDuel. I still don't care. What about you?
Yeah, I don't either. I think the only option I consider in this on the Philadelphia side is probably the defense. Yeah. Just because you know, as you said, Washington on the road is a different team. There's a lot at stake here.
Washington's special teams are really bad too, and we know that Philadelphia excels in that. I'll pull up the stat here, but that's something to consider there as well.
Right. So, you know, that is a nice play, a play that probably people will be off of because they can be hot and cold, as we've seen. And, you know, people will be on Kirk Cousins after, you know, he's been really hot last, you know, several weeks. He's had some good games. So people will be on him. I don't think there's any reason to stop playing Jordan Reed. I still think he's even in a matchup that is proven to be a little bit tougher for tight ends. I think he's just a stud. I think you just keep rolling him out. I don't think his price is – while it's creeping up on DraftKings, he's worth it. I mean, I think that when we've seen the tight end production of some of the higher-priced tight ends like Olsen and even on the higher tier like Gronk, you know, who've had some up-and-down games as well, I think Reed has proven that he's fairly consistent. And I think that, you know, I'd pay up for him over paying up for – some of the other tight ends are even taking like those deep dart moonshots on some of the lower price guys. So yeah. So I dial up Reed out of anybody in this matchup. I think Reed is probably the safest play, probably a good cash play as well this week for me. So yeah, that's it for me. I mean, I really don't love this matchup. I think it could be a surprising matchup. We could see some, you know, nice production from other players, but it's about the Jordan Reed show for me. I mean, does anybody else that really tickle your fancy for Washington or Philadelphia?
Yeah, there are a couple plays I like here. I do want to say I guess Washington's gotten better. They've only given up 4 defensive touchdowns, only one of those a kick return. They were worse early in the year. It was a big talking point in Washington, but I guess they fixed their kicking game. How about this? Just as an aside, as my ADD goes, the Chicago Bears have given up 7 defensive touchdowns, 3 interception returns, 1 fumble return, 2 kick return, and 1 punt return. 7. They've given up every other game. They've given up a defensive touchdown.
That's crazy.
Target the Bears. Everybody loves the Bucks. All right. So there are a couple of plays I like on the Philadelphia side. I do kind of like Ryan Matthews or Darren Sproles a little bit. I would have to pick which one I'm going to take a shot on. If I did, it would probably be Ryan Matthews. He has 27 touches in the last 2 games. He averaged 5 yards a carry last week. He looked a little bit more like the explosive guy we saw in the preseason. Washington has the 23rd best adjusted line yards, 20th stuff rate. They let people get to the second level, and their linebackers and safeties aren't good. They give the 31st ranked second levels team according to Football Outsiders, which means they're, once people get there, they're giving up big plays, and the numbers show that. They've given up the 2nd most runs of 30 or more yards and the 8th most runs of 20 or more yards. So they give up big plays, and we saw from Ryan Matthews how explosive he can be. And so I do think Ryan Matthews is interesting. I think Zach Ertz, and all of these are tournament guys, I think Zach Ertz is interesting.
Yep.
Washington's 25th DVOA against tight ends, and Ertz has 20 targets total the last 2 games. So he had tournament value last week. I think he's a good tournament play if you're playing that kind of Thursday, Saturday slate. And then on the other side, I love DeSean Jackson. I was on him like crazy last week. He hit. And, I mean, this is about as narrative street as you can get. I mean, he really does not like Chip Kelly in Philadelphia.
Who does, really?
That's a fair point. But he wasn't in the matchup earlier this season. Yeah. But last season, he went over 100 yards and scored a touchdown. He didn't score a touchdown the second game, but he went over 100 yards in both games, scored a touchdown in one of them. He's going to come out to play. He's one of the best deep threats in the league, and we saw what John Brown was able to do to him. He dropped him, but that doesn't matter. He was able to get deep. He's come close to tournament value in 3 of the last 5. I like DeSean Jackson quite a bit at 6,800 in FanDuel. And I agree with you completely about Jordan Reed. What do you think about Kirk Cousins? Because if you're really looking at the home road splits here of Washington, he's the guy that you see them in. But His best road game was 2 weeks ago against Chicago. He threw for 300 yards. He had a 20-point game. Since DeSean Jackson's been back, he's been a much more explosive player. He was completing about 16%, according to Pro Football Focus, of his deep shots, shots 20 yards down the field without DeSean Jackson. Since DeSean Jackson's back, that's closer to 45%. His yards per attempt has gone up from something like 6.5 to closer to 9. He's just become a much more explosive quarterback with DeSean Jackson, which makes sense. And we know how bad this Philadelphia secondary is and how hurt it is. I think there's some Kirk Cousins love. I really do. He's a tournament play, and that road split really hurts him a lot. But I do think that there's some interesting upside here with Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that when you consider, too, a lot of people, because we have this slate now with, you know, with the Thursday, if you play in a tournament that starts on Thursday and goes all the way to Monday, you've got the Thursday and the Saturday game. I think it gets overlooked at times. And I think there is some narrative street, like you were talking about, people thinking that Cousins on the road is a bad matchup. But again, having Jackson back, to your point, also open things up for Cousins to kind of make plays with his feet a little bit. You know, he's a little bit more confident in that sense. So I think that it does kind of open the field up a little bit rather than, you know, have this sort of be a shorter field for him to play. And I think that would be to Philadelphia's advantage if they don't have somebody like Jackson to kind of open things up. So they have to account for him. You're absolutely right. He is totally going to be lit for this matchup. He's going to be ready to take the top off. I think there's certainly, you can go back to that. Well, I know people get nervous because they don't like to quote unquote chase points. Let's say something. Let's lay this all out there for everybody to listen to right now. I know the people that who doing this a lot longer than you and I in DFS don't chase points. It's week 16. It's impossible not to chase points some weeks. It's just guys have been proving it week to week to week. If you completely repel point chasing, quote unquote, then you're probably not going to score a lot of points because there are just some teams that are set up to be, you know, to have good weeks, good matchups. They're prolific in the passing game. They're going to throw the football. It's set up nicely for both teams. You can't ignore that. You just don't call it point chasing. Call it smart matchup chasing. And that's exactly what it is. And I think with somebody like Cousins, like you said, with Reed and DeSean Jackson, it sets up nicely, too, for a tournament. I think people will be avoiding it a little bit because I think a lot of sharp players tend to start on a Thursday, you know, tournament and basically stay away from the Thursday game, or in this case, a Saturday game, and go right to the main slate. And there's an opportunity there for you to go after that. And again, the sharp people, a lot of times the sharp people will avoid, you know, point chasing, and that would be considered point chasing. And I think there's an opportunity for you to take advantage of that if you wanted to make a stack. Even if you wanted to stack all three, I think there's an opportunity for all three to have nice games in this matchup.
And I mean, I don't even think if people are calling DeSean Jackson point chasing, they haven't been paying attention.
Even Cousins.
Well, Cousins, yeah. I mean, I had Cousins in my waiver article as a look ahead last week, so I was a little upset he blew up because I thought we would get lower ownership. I'm a little worried about his ownership now. But right, with DeSean Jackson, I mean, he scored a touchdown in four of the last five games. He's been making big plays. He's been getting targeted. He's been good. I was on him. Like I talked about it on this podcast last week. I was on him last week. I'm still on him this week. I think that he is at this point. He's probably the best downfield playmaker we have, and it's really nice to see Cousins kind of expanding his horizons with DeSean Jackson, which makes sense. It helps when you have a really, really, really good playmaker to throw to. As it turns out, that's useful.
Yeah, I will say this too, Ray. To that point about ownership levels, I think this week is a lot like last week. We had talked about last week being sort of, you know, a spread out, you know, situation for quarterbacks. We liked a lot of plays last week in that the ownership would be kind of even, and it was. There wasn't really a big, big top quarterback play. It was like a 15% owned quarterback and then a lot of 12, 11, 10%. Like it was really spread out. And I think that, you know, 9, 8%, I think that we'll see a lot of that. So I don't think that necessarily is prohibitive to not, you know, to avoid Cousins because you think he might go up because ownership, you know, recency bias, people will be chasing that. I don't think that at all. I think that there are a lot of great plays this week. We'll touch on a couple of them in a minute, but I think people will be looking at some of those other plays as well. So there's an opportunity there for you to still kind of get in potentially on a situation that may not blow up in terms of ownership this week.
Our next game is Carolina at Atlanta. Carolina's 7-point road favorites. The total's 47.5. There are some 7.5s out there. There are some 47 totals. 76% of the actions on Carolina, as I mean, I think we expected completely. In fact, I'm shocked it's not 80%. So we'll see what happens to that line. The fact that it moved off a key number like 7 and is moving up means it could go up even higher. So we'll see what happens there. Maybe those are just a few books, you know, testing it out. We'll start with Carolina. I said it last week, and I will continue to say it every week. Not having Cam Newton in at least one of your tournament lineups is DFS malpractice. And you need to make sure that you have a lineup with Cam. And that's about all I have to say about that. Do you have anything more to add on Cam?
No, I mean, you know, listen, I had tournament stat. I mean, I had a tournament lineup with Cam and Ted Ginn last week. Unfortunately, I
just
didn't
do
have
it every week.
Unfortunately, I didn't have David Johnson in that lineup, so it didn't really matter all that much. But you know, absolutely, I think. I mean, his ceiling and his floor are still incredibly high. That's the type of player that you want to roster in cash or in tournaments. I mean, he's so safe. It doesn't matter where he's priced. He really is kind of where Gronk was not long ago as a tight end, where you just didn't care. You know, you knew every week he was going to be returning, you know, that investment. And I think that's kind of where Cam is. I mean, he's had maybe one or two games where he didn't return money all season. And I mean, and they were really borderline too. It was just a game kind of flow situation where he didn't have to.
Yeah, and that really one of those games was the Dallas game, which you and I kind of predicted, and he still scored, I think, 18 points at FanDuel. That was his bad game, was 18
points. Right, right. And most weeks you're like, wow, it's great. I'm glad I got 18 points out of him. But yeah, absolutely. So he's super safe. You can't price him high enough for my taste. I mean, I think that he's always going to kind of potentially, you know, be plus EV, and then other weeks, you know, sometimes he'll just completely, you know, return money nice and even and you're fine. So, and for me, it's like, you know, you have to make those decisions. I mean, I'm staying away from the running backs. It's a carousel. It probably will be again this week. I'm not going to throw another dart. I did it last week. I won't do that again. I mean, somebody might do that this week. I just don't suggest doing that. I think it's kind of a waste. And that's another lineup too, Ray. I had, trying to think who it was. I think it might have been Tolbert. I used Tolbert because he was like, they were all 3K. Okay, the Carolina running backs were all like 3K. I stayed away from Whitaker, which was smart because he got nothing. He got zero. How many touches did he get?
I think it was like 3.
Yeah, 3. So I stayed away from him, and I like, okay, I'm going to lean toward Tolbert because I think he's going to get some goal line carries at least, and maybe he'll return money with a touchdown. I used him and Adrian Peterson in one tournament lineup. So that was
– That went well.
Yeah. So that's another one where
I'll probably take another shot in Cameras Artist Payne. That was my guy last week, and I can't take credit for that because it was only the great work of ESPN's reporter David Newton, who covers the Panthers for ESPN, who does really good work. And he wrote an article beginning of December that if something ever happened to Jonathan Stewart, Cameron Artist Payne would be the guy.
You talked about that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And guess what? He was right. And Cameron Artis Payne was the guy. Cameron Artis Payne got one of the goal line carries. Tolbert got the other. They both got stuffed. We'll see what happens. If I'm taking a shot on FanDuel at 5,600, I'll take it on Artis Payne. Because right. He didn't look bad, and Atlanta's been, aside from Denard Robinson last week, pretty suspect against the run lately. But I agree with you in principle. It is going to be a carousel. It's one of those things where you're just kind of hoping you pick the guy that gets the touchdown.
Yeah,
and that's one of the situations. And with Cam Newton doing what Cam Newton things, there's a chance that neither of them get a touchdown.
Right. That was a scenario too. Was they both had a shot, and then ended up going to Ginn right in the corner.
Yeah, exactly. And, well, so Cam Artis Payne as I call him Cap, you know, because we're friends. He had he had one, and he got stuffed for, I think, lost two, and I think Tolbert had one at the three. Yep. Yeah, it didn't work. But that doesn't mean it's not going to work this week, especially I don't think either of us have any grand ideas about what Atlanta is going to be able to do against this defense.
Right. You know, Olsen is pretty high priced, but I think he's, you know, in cash, he's a safe play. I just don't think in tournaments, I think he's going to be highly owned. I just kind of don't want to really, I think he's a type of a tight end. He's like Gronk in a way that he could have sort of a down week and not return money, because he's being priced now at the point where, you know, he has to have a pretty solid volume game. And I don't necessarily know that, you know, that's always week to week. I can count on that for him.
And to your point, at this price, he's 6,800 on FanDuel.
Yeah.
He hasn't really hit tournament value except once this year, and that was against Seattle. And it was that late Fury comeback that got him there. So to your point, yeah, he really hasn't been a tournament value kind of guy all year.
Yeah, exactly. So kind of avoid that, you know, in cash, it's safe if you can work around that. But he's still very high priced. I think, again, you can find better value at tight end, even in your cash lineups. On the opposite side, who do you like for Atlanta?
Nobody? Is that an acceptable answer?
You don't like Julio at all, huh?
I just don't. I don't see the upside. I mean, he did about as well as I think you can expect him to do against Josh Norman in at least half of the snaps. I mean, he moves in the slot enough, and he's such a good receiver. I mean, he's one of the best wide receivers in the league. I don't think I'm going out on a limb and saying that, but he went 7 for 88 against him 2 weeks ago. I think that's about as well as he's going to do, and he's $8,600 on FanDuel. I have no interest in paying for that. I mean, there's an argument that you take a low-owned approach, and he's going to be so low-owned. He kind of fits my contrarian mold, a really good player who's low owned.
Yeah.
And maybe there's something to be said about that, but it's just, I'm not that interested. This offense, even last week when they played quote unquote well, and Matt Ryan he had a really good fourth quarter, Matt Ryan. He converted a lot of third and longs, and they had a bunch of long drives. They still settled for field goals. And that was against Jacksonville. It just, this offense is not working.
No,
and
I agree.
Devontae Freeman is not doing anything. I think he has less than 3.5 yards of carry in each of his last three games. I just don't want any part of it. I don't see the upside, and I definitely don't want to play them in cash. And so you know, it's just one of those things. I assume you're off on Matt Ryan as well.
Yeah. Matt Ryan, I mean, you know, it'll be a situation where, you know, they're going to have to throw. I think they'll have to put in his hands, and it's a bad matchup for him. Matt Ryan's a type of player, even at home, you know, in his house, in a situation like this, he could certainly turn the ball over multiple times against a really tough defense. So, yeah, I'm with you. Freeman is too high priced for me. You know, he was having weeks, and even last week was okay because he's so involved in the passing game. But there are kind of, you know, a lot of players that are equal in that sense, that they have such a high involvement in the passing game. They just maybe don't get as many touches. That are priced probably half of what he's priced right now, or maybe, you know, three quarters of what he's priced, and you can still get those players at a discount, and you don't have to really pay up. And for me, that's why I'm fading Freeman. I don't dislike Freeman. You know that. I mean, he did so much early on in the season that was fantastic. I just think this whole offense is really kind of floundering right now. This whole team really is floundering, and I just, you know, against a juggernaut like Carolina, and they're just playing with such confidence, it's just not a good situation. I mean, I think they're going to be able to kind of keep him at bay in terms of on the ground, and he'll get his targets in the passing game. But again, there are other players for half the money that are going to be as heavily involved in the passing game, and we'll touch on that, that you just don't have to pay up for. So, I'm off Freeman this week, and I don't really care if his ownership is low. It won't be that low. It'll still be pretty, I think, still pretty in that median range where people will be paying for him.
All I have to say about Atlanta is Matt Ryan has thrown one or fewer touchdown passes in each of his last four games, and they manage as an offense 2 touchdowns against Jacksonville.
Mm.
That's pretty much all pretty much all I need to know.
Drew Brees and his Daniel Day-Lewis foot will like do twice that amount of volume.
It's actually his right foot, but that's fine.
Whatever. It's not his left foot. Yeah, yeah.
That's that's a solid pull. I applaud you.
Thank you.
Our final game we have here is Pittsburgh at Baltimore. Pittsburgh's 10-point road favorite, so we know what I'll be doing. What will I be doing, Rummy?
You got money on Baltimore.
Oh, yes, I do. 81% of the actions on Pittsburgh. It's 11.5 at five dimes. So it's Pittsburgh by 11.5 at five dimes, which is a really respected online book. It's a, kind of considered a sharp book. So I expect that this number is going to go up. Wow. 71% on the over, which 47.5. I'll bet Baltimore because that's what I do. And we'll kind of see what happens. The quarterback situation in Baltimore is interesting. There were comments came out this week that they want to get Ryan Mallett some starts. Oof. That's what it sounded like. You know, Jimmy Clausen's been playing competently. Can we say that?
Yeah.
Competently the last 2 weeks. We'll see how much of the offense Ryan Mallett knows. Harbaugh made it very clear. He's going to have to, you know, trust how much Mallett knows, but it makes sense. They want Mallett to be their backup next year of Joe Flacco. It makes sense they try to get him starts this year. So I guess we'll have to see how that plays out. On this Baltimore side, I have one guy I really like, and that's Kamari Akin.
Yeah, me too.
So we're agreeing on that, but other than that, I don't think there's anything. But tell me a little bit about Akin.
Well, obviously he's getting the volume. He's getting the especially with Clausen. That's why we definitely want Clausen to stick around. Because he's targeting him heavily. He's had some you know, obviously some chemistry with him, you know, not being a starter, and he's been able to kind of develop that with Akin. So he's looking to him, the guy that he trusts. So he's going to continue to see targets. I mean, there just isn't really anybody else in this offense to essentially count on. So he's the de facto one. He's going to get targets. Pittsburgh, you know, another team that is great against the run, not very good against the pass. And, you know, Akin's going to get his. He's going to get, you know, potentially 12, 13 targets in this game. So what's not to love? On DraftKings, I think he's still like 50-something hundred.
On FanDuel, he's 6,600, so he's still pretty low.
Yeah, I mean, he's a bargain. And with that kind of volume, you can get him in your lineup with some of these other guys that we all like from other matchups. And he fits in the puzzle. I mean, that's to me, that he's a solid cash play. You know, because of the volume, and, you know, still a pretty solid tournament play. Because I think people, you know, look at this offense and they kind of turn their nose up. And, you know, I want a slice of that pie because of the matchup as well. I think Pittsburgh's going to be able to do what they need to do. I mean, this on the Pittsburgh side, I mean, Roethlisberger, Antonio Brown, Martavis, who I really like this week, obviously because he's of his price, and I think he's going to be able to find the red zone this week. You know, D'Angelo Williams, it's not a prohibitive matchup anymore against Baltimore. I mean, I think you can still run on them, and he's going to be involved in the passing game. So I think Williams is still a good play, and his price hasn't really gone up all that much. And, you know, Heath Miller to a lesser extent. And if you really want to get cute in GPPs, who the hell knows? Maybe Marcus Wheaton finds the end zone this week. It's that kind of potential where they can just kind of run their offense to their full powers basically, and put up points. So, but it sets up nicely. I think they're going to go over the over under in this one. I think potentially.
Yeah, and if you're of the opinion, if you're part of the 81% betting on Pittsburgh, if you're of the opinion Pittsburgh's going to, you know, blow up, then you obviously have to think Baltimore's going to have to throw, and if they're going to have to throw, they've got one person to throw to. And that's Kamari Akin. So I think that play, I agree with you on the other side. I mean, Antonio Brown, he's at this point with Antonio Brown where he's just kind of have to play him. That's at the level he's at right now. Mm-hmm. Ben Roethlisberger is playing like one of the best quarterbacks in the league. I mean, he is one of the best quarterbacks in the league at this point. And so even at his price, he's 8,900 on FanDuel. I still think that he's an option in tournaments. The one concern I have about Martavis Bryant, well, it's kind of twofold. One, he's been used a lot more like kind of a possession receiver the last 2 weeks, which is not something I want to see from him. I want him down the field making big plays, but he keeps getting the targets. He has 7 targets in every game he's played this year. He keeps getting the targets, so that's nice. He only has five red zone looks since the bye weeks of the last four games. Mm-hmm. Marcus Wheaton has seven over that span, including three last week. Marcus Wheaton's playing basically as many snaps as Martavis Bryant is. Marcus Wheaton is having, you know, he has a much worse matchup this week in the slot against Webb, which is definitely Baltimore's, you know, best corner, especially their best corner. And Bryant's going to attack the outside guys, which is where the matchup is. But there is some concern about Bryant. You know, I'm looking at him at that price, 7,200. I'm thinking I'd like to use him in cash. I'm going to have to decide about that, because if he's not getting the red zone looks and he's not really being pushed down the field, that severely limits his upside a little bit. But like you said, I absolutely love him. And then D'Angelo Williams, he just gets so much volume all the time. He's involved in the passing game. He's going to get the targets.
Shampoo back, baby.
Yeah, exactly. Even though Baltimore is not a, as matchup it was, it's not a great matchup. It doesn't matter.
Right.
He's going to get so much volume that you just have to love him. I think he's a cash play for sure, even though they're on the road, which is something I'm not big. So before we get on to stacks on stacks, we had a listener request. I hope not a viewer. I hope he's not a listener. If you are, don't kill me. A listener request for Bilal Powell. And if Bilal Powell is a cash play at DraftKings, where he is 3,900, what do you think?
I think that it's a bold cash move. But to the point that I was making earlier about Devonta Freeman, I think that, you know, we've seen Chris Ivory get stuffed by New England. You know, they're set up really nicely to stop the type of runner that Chris Ivory is. And I think that they will this week. And I think somebody like Powell probably will get a little bit more run in this game, because I think the Patriots set up really nicely to kind of limit the passing game in this matchup. I mean, again, not to get off on a big tangent here, but the first meeting, I don't think the New England defensive backs were the defensive backs that they are now.
And they still limited Brandon Marshall.
Right. And I think that they are set up to probably have Malcolm Butler on Decker, and we'll see Logan Ryan with some help on Marshall. And I think that keeps them in check. And now where else do you go? We know what the targets are. We know that Fitzpatrick works with so many targets, and there are essentially just really three that are really key to this offense for him. And the third option would be, outside of handing it off to Ivory, would be Bilal Powell, who's been very, very involved in the passing game in this offense. He's been a pretty prolific pass-catching running back. So for me, especially on DraftKings, I think in cash, I think, you know, it's a little ballsy, but I think we feel comfortable knowing that his floor is probably going to be 4 to 5 catches in this game. So on DraftKings at that price, he's going to return value, I think. So again, while we like to feel safe, we tried to feel safe last week with Adrian Peterson as one of our running backs, and that didn't pan out. It happens week to week. So Powell in a roundabout way, and on a PPR format like DraftKings, I think I'm okay with him in cash. I think I feel really good about him in tournaments, though.
I'm at 3,900 on DraftKings. I'm 100% in on Powell in cash. I think he's a great play.
Yep.
He has 5 catches in 4 of his 5 games since returning from injury. I have to say, the last 3 weeks, that is the best Bilal Powell has ever looked.
Absolutely.
On an NFL field. He is so fast right now. I don't know if he lost some weight. I don't know what's happening. He's been good in stretches. There was a stretch, I guess it was a couple years ago, where he even got some lead back run, and he looked good and he made some big plays, but he has never, ever looked the way he looked the last 3 weeks, like a man possessed. I love him this week. I think you said Chris Ivory was shut down the last time they played New England. That front seven, New England's playing as well as any unit.
It's even more fortified now.
Absolutely.
They've got Hicks now, Malcolm Brown, the rookie, is playing at such a high level. They don't really even miss Wolfork right now. It's like their interior defensive line is outstanding. And that's where Ivory makes hay. I mean, I think you kind of have to pivot to Powell.
And Ivory hasn't been good lately anyway. I'm 100% in on Bilal Powell. He is. I'm in on him in both sites. But like you said, at DraftKings, he's so reasonably priced. and he is, and it's a PPR, full PPR site, and he's almost guaranteed five catches, 100% in. Absolutely love him. Cool. On our stacks on stacks on stacks on stacks on stacks, I've already talked about a few of them. We had Bortles and Denard Robinson's one I talked about earlier, Drew Brees and Brandon Cooks, depending on Drew Brees' health. One that I am really interested in this week in tournaments is Carlos Williams and the Bills defense. I'm interested to see what Carlos Williams' ownership will be. This is another situation. I talked last week, and I had it in one of my Thursday tournaments, about playing Charcandrick West in Thursday and with the Chiefs defense, because I thought people, we didn't know really what Ware was going to do. And so people, I thought they'd be off, and they were. Charcandrick West was 7% owned in my tournament. I think we'll have a similar situation here with Carlos Williams. I don't think, I'm not that worried about Mike Gillisley. I know he had more touches and more snaps last week, but Carlos Williams didn't get his first touch until after LeSean McCoy left the game, which suggests that he was more of like an emergency back, and the emergency arose and they used him. I'm not that worried about Mike Gillisley because he's Mike Gillisley. And we've, you know, I mean, he couldn't climb the depth chart in Miami. He's never really been that guy. He's playing well now, but I'm not really that concerned about him. So I love Carlos Williams this week in tournaments. I'm probably not paying him in cash, but he's great value. I believe he's 5,300 on FanDuel, somewhere around there. It's off the top of my head. Probably should have written that down. But I think that he's a great situation. And then Buffalo, they're getting Kellen Moore at home. So even though there's so much kind of negativity surrounding this defense right now, Mario Williams is going to get cut in the offseason. Preston Brown came out and called out the coaching staff this week. Everybody's kind of down on them. Maybe they're not as high owned, but they're still playing Kellen Moore. So I like that a lot, that correlation of Carlos Williams, the Bills defense and tournaments. And like I said, I'll play it on Thursday because there's going to be more uncertainty about Carlos Williams' role on Thursday, and that should lead to much lower ownership than perhaps we'll see in the weekend.
Awesome. I love it. I'm going to see your defense and running back stack and raise you a defense and running back stack. The Oakland defense and Latavius Murray on DraftKings. Latavius Murray, I know he hasn't been super sexy as of late, but we know the San Diego defense can be had on the ground. They're playing with heavy hearts after last week, their last game at their stadium. I think Oakland is in that situation with the young Bucks. They're certainly physical. This San Diego team is just exhausted. You know, they really don't have much firepower left. And I think that the Oakland defense can certainly get after that offensive line and make it difficult for Phillip Rivers. And it correlates nicely. Oakland's a favorite in this one. They're at home. It sets up nicely for Murray to basically have a decent volume game here. So he's my poor man's muscle hamster, if you will. I know that hurts your heart a little bit, but
extremely poor man.
Exactly. But I think it sets up nicely for him. I think they'll be probably pretty underowned. I do like Oakland this week. That's one of my, not to get ahead to the contrarian plays, but that's one of my defenses this week. So I do like the Oakland Latavius Murray stack.
No, I love the Oakland defense. Oakland's had multiple sacks in the last five. They have multiple takeaways. They've been unbelievable. San Diego, has there ever been a better letdown spot than the Thursday night after the, you know, the closing of your stadium, the last game?
Yeah, it's just like it's like letting all of the air out of the sails. Just
Eric
like,
Weddle might still be at Qualcomm Stadium,
still just taking, still brushing his beard out, taking selfies.
He might still. So yeah, I mean, Oakland six is minus six in that game,
and they're at the pretty much at the bottom, and they're almost minimum basically price on DraftKings. Yeah,
I will bet Oakland at minus six on Thursday night. I will play their defense. I'm 100%. I agree with you. Another stack I'm really interested in, and this is another health contingent one. He practiced today. I think he'll be cleared in time, and it's Brian Hoyer and Denard Hopkins at Tennessee.
DeAndre Hopkins.
What did I say?
You said Denard, but that's okay.
See, I got shoelace on my mind. I love your shoelace.
Nice.
So yeah, sorry. So Nuck, I'll just call him Nuck.
There
so 200. So Brian Hoyer had 235 yards and two touchdowns last time against Tennessee, and they didn't even have to open up the offense because Zach Mettenberger was terrible in Houston. Now Zach Mettenberger is going to play again this week. You have to think they're a little bit better at home, and so maybe they have to open up a little bit more. Hopkins had 11 targets the last time that they played Tennessee. or he had 11 targets, excuse me, last week, which was a bump up from where he had been. He went for 8 catches, 94 yards, and a touchdown last time they played Tennessee. I like Hopkins a lot this week. I love Hoyer. Hoyer's so low priced that if you pair them together, you can still a reasonably priced stack. And, you know, if you really want to go contrarian on this, you could put in Nate Washington. Cecil Shorts isn't going to play. Nate Washington had 74 yards and a touchdown against Tennessee without Cecil Shorts. Last time he had 22, 23 targets, something like that, in the two games without Cecil Shorts this year. So he has been pretty much money without Cecil Shorts in the two games that he didn't play. And so if you really wanted to go contrarian, you could maybe go that way. And I think everybody knows I'm a Titans fan. This team has quit. They have no interest. I mean, you got to watch them 2 weeks ago or last week. They have no interest in tackling anybody or doing anything. They're just
playing for a high draft pick.
Yeah, they're done. Like they're on the beach and have been on the beach for 2 weeks. There was a tackle, one of Bilal Powell's touchdowns, actually. He ran through like five people that didn't care, and Paris Cox basically like two-hand touched him at the goal line, like hoping that he had a flag that he could pull, and so he'd be down. It's not pretty. It's not pretty in Tennessee. So I'm all for playing Hoyer, Hopkins, Washington, Alfred Blue. I'm all for playing all of them.
Nice, nice. Now, this one is probably not my last. This is my last stack, but this is probably one that's, you know, not optimal, but certainly in a GPP, I'm going to throw some darts here. I like the Eli Randall Will Tye stack. I think it's going to be so brutally low. Randall. I know, you know what, Reuben Randall, he kills me, but his targets are going to go up. He's going to have to contribute.
Absolutely.
I would say this, though. If you want to pivot off Randall and you want to get really super contrarian, I think you can go Eli, Nix, and Will Tye.
Let me
tell you why. Because Eli was going right back to that corner fade to Hakeem Nix yet again. And I think that they will include him a lot more in this offense. I know he's old, he's broken down, but that fade is like, you know, it's like Wonder Boy, man, cranking that going yard, hitting the lights, and you know, the natural. It's gonna happen. We know how this plays out. So I even tweeted this out. I see this potentially happening. So he's probably going to be 0% owned. And
rightfully 0% owned.
And he's exactly. You're right. But I'm talking GPPs here. You want to go super contrarian? That's going to be the play. Nobody's going to touch him. And he's probably at minimum price. He's probably going to score a touchdown. Probably going to have enough targets to easily return his investment times four potentially. And that's really what you're looking for. So if you're using him, even if you're just using an Eli Nick stack as your flex, then you know it's worth it to just get really super low ownership and really kind of pivot and stack elsewhere. So I like that. Listen, it's ballsy.
Oh no,
somebody's gonna win a fucking tournament with that shit storm right there without Odell Beckham. I mean, I do realize obviously without Odell Beckham, it limits this offense completely. It just takes the power, the volume out of this offense. It's going to slow everything down. We know that Minnesota is going to just run the football most of the time anyway, and take some deep shots here and there. But for me, you know, if you're going to do a true contrarian stack, then why not? You know, take that shot and see what happens. So,
yeah, I agree about Ty though. I mean, if I have a stack, I won't have a stack with Eli. But
he's super cheap too.
If I did have a stack with Eli, I don't know why I need the wide receiver. I would just put Ty because Ty had 8 targets last week.
Yep.
You could easily make the argument at this point that without Odell Beckham, he is the safest, most reliable passing game option that Eli has. And so I would just roll with Will Tye.
It's an either or situation. And I agree with you. I love Tye, and it's another one of the guys that, again, I mentioned that in the stack, but I think that you could possibly just sort of mitigate some of that risk as well and just go one or the other. So if you wanted to go Eli and Will Tye, that's fine too. And there's potential there for a super low ownership where Eli could still have a respectable amount of points, and two of those touchdowns could go to Will Tye.
I'm going to schedule a tweet for 2 p.m. on Sunday you for your Hakeem Nick. Oh, no, they play on Sunday night, don't they? So at 9 p.m. Sunday night congratulating you for your Akeem Nicks call.
because I'm telling you, that corner fade, baby. Oh my God. It's like Peaches and Herb, man, reunited.
I'm just going to
so good.
Schedule it now. We've already talked about a few of my contrarian guys, Kamar Aiken, who I think we're both on.
Yep.
James Jones, that's just me. A guy, two running backs that I'll be on this week that I think will be very low owned. One is Lamar Miller, who had 20 carries the last time that he was forgotten in a game against the Jets. They had a very similar situation. They were on the road. I believe that was on the road. Either way, they were getting blown out, and Jay Ajayi came in and dominated snaps in the second half, and everybody was like, well, what's happening? Is Ajayi taking over? And then the next game, Lamar Miller had 20 carries. This week, I could see a very similar thing happening. Indianapolis is a 17th best rush defense in DVOA, but it's getting worse. D'Angelo Williams, Bernard Robinson, Alfred Blue, TJ Yeldon all ran through them. Alfred Blue, 20 carries, 170 yards. Alfred Blue. So I think that there's a little bit of touchdown luck going on here. They've only given up one touchdown in the last 5 weeks, and so that makes their overall fantasy numbers look good. But overall, the defense hasn't been good. Miller has an incredibly high ceiling. His price came down a little bit. I think that Lamar Miller is a great tournament play this week, an absolutely great tournament play, and I like him a lot. And then the other running back would be Donald Brown in San Diego. Melvin Gordon's on IR. Melvin Gordon hasn't done anything this year. He didn't score a touchdown in his rookie year, which is just sad based on how many touches he was getting. But the one thing he did get was work. He averaged 17 touches a game from week 8 until last week. And that includes last week, even when it was injury shortened. Donald Brown came in and took all of those touches. He was hyper efficient against the Dolphins, although the Dolphins, much like the Titans, decided they didn't want to play defense last week. He gained 90 yards on 12 carries. You know, this is a guy, he got some money in free agency because he put together a pretty decent end of the season with Indianapolis that 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that Donald Brown is a great running back, but I don't think he's a bad running back. And if he's going to get 15 to 17 touches, there's some value there. And so even in a kind of bad matchup in a letdown spot for San Diego against Oakland, I do think there's a little bit of value for him. So those are a couple of the contrarian guys. You got any other contrarian ones you like?
Yeah, there's a few, actually. Some of these are sort of contingent, too, on the health of some other players. And I'll get to some defenses, too. We just talked about one as well earlier. But Charles Clay, he's been out for a while now. And when he was in the fold, Tyrod Taylor really liked him. Pretty much anybody that was playing quarterback for Buffalo really liked him. And I think if Clay is back this week and there's some talk that he's, you know, he's been practicing, he's potentially a go for this week. I like him. I think he's one of those guys that in that offense, he's going to get volume. The way he's utilized like a slot receiver. And I really like him. I think he's going to probably be 0% owned. He's minimum priced. Somebody that you can slide into your lineup in a GPP and almost unnoticed with a lot of other really solid plays, some solid chalk plays and a nice mixture of stars and scrubs. And get somebody in like Clay in your lineup, it'd be pretty unique. And I haven't heard anybody talk about him. If he's good to go, I like him this week. I think the way it's set up that he could certainly have a decent volume game. Now, here's one, Ray, that from my side of the coin here for New England, he just joined the team. Patriots are super banged up. And I think Leonard Hankerson is worth a dart if we see that Amendola is not good to go. It already looks like, to me, it's kind of an iffy thing with Edelman. And LaFell is going to be playing hurt. So last I heard, he was out today for practice. So he's still nursing an injury. So it's Gronk, really, and James White. So that's another play I like as well. I think James White's going to be very, very busy in this offense. So I think James White as a receiving play, pass catching back, is another alternative. If you don't want to go the Powell route, you can go to James White as well. But I think Hankerson is kind of a really super deep contrarian play. Get him involved, take some deep shots to him. He's one of those guys that could certainly score two touchdowns. We've seen him do that with Atlanta, with New England. You know, he's got some of the verbiage down from having experience with that offense, at least some of the understanding. Having played for Atlanta under that, you know, regime with the front office that, you know, at least he knows what to expect when he gets to New England. So there's potential for him there. He's completely healthy. good to go. He's already had a week of practice and some more time under his belt. So I think there's a really deep shot for him, and I don't think anybody will really be on him this week at all. He's another one who will be probably 0% on. So, again, if you're going to take a deep, deep shot, contrarian play in a GPP, he's worth a play. I would say if you're playing, you know, on a big tournament and you're using volume, I wouldn't touch him. But if you're in a cheap tournament, he's somebody certainly that I would throw a dart for.
All right. So that does it for us. Week 16 in the books.
Happy holidays, everybody.
Exactly. Happy holidays, everyone. You know, stay safe out on the roads. Stay at home with your folks, with the fam, whoever that is. And make sure that you come back and see us. Listen this far. Give us a subscription. Give us a rate and review wherever you happen to listen to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter. I'm at RM Summerlin. He's at Rumford Johnny. And as always, if you hear someone dropping knowledge, what would Cheech and Chong say?
Pick it up, man. Yeah, man. I can dig that, man. Pick it up.